This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Hello, and welcome to episode 55 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering season 3, episode 8 of Star Trek Discovery, titled The Sanctuary. But before we get started, we have some additional feedback on some prior episodes, mostly on last week's podcast, but there's also some stuff from Ken from Chicago, which seems to go back a little before that. So let's open hailing frequencies. Okay, first we have a voicemail, first of two, from Trey from Pittsburgh.
Yay.
Hey guys, it's Trey. I just listened to your podcast and I wanted to say thank you so much. That has been bothering me with thinking Curzon Dax was a Klingon since the beginning of the season, and I always thought that. So see what happens when, you know, you guys are out there for us. All right. That's it for me. Thanks, guys. Awesome. Bye.
Well, you're welcome.
Short but sweet, but glad we could be of service.
Yeah.
So, and as I said, this is the first of two voicemails from Trey. So again, I'll cut this one off because that was a short one. So just give you a mini showcase. So instead of getting a new car, this is a new motorcycle or something. or what is it? A new scooter.
A new scooter.
But anyway, so glad we could be of service. All right. So we also got some feedback from Ken from Chicago via Twitter, of course. Ruthie, you want to tackle that?
All right. He says, David Cronenberg's character was interrogating Georgiou, but she wouldn't talk, so he let her ask him questions, thus revealing what she was interested in, just as Black Widow did similar in the Avengers movie twice.
So, yes, this is what we were talking about before, but we were wondering when he was talking about the Avengers movie. That's what he was talking about.
Yeah, well, he said something like you were talking about it. I don't know. In any case, thanks, Ken. I did remember that, and that's exactly what it made me think of. So we're on the same page. He goes on to say, speaking of interrogations, I think those holograms were intentionally off-putting to get a rise out of people to reveal more information emotionally. They also had an echo to show their holograms, the way natural gas companies add an aroma so you know if gas is leaking. That's funny.
That's a good metaphor.
Yeah. By the way, I totally agree. No frelling way should Ensign Tilly should be made acting number one after a mere year. #nope.
Yeah.
Data said in #TNG's data lore that it took 3 years for an ensign to be considered for lieutenant. I get why, because #melodrama. And he has, I guess that's the thinking face. I don't know, the hand on the chin and the Spock emoji hand emoticon.
Yeah, it looks that way.
And he points out a link to Memory Alpha Fandom, which you can find on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, go find @KenFromChicago. Then he says, for an inexperienced captain with an inexperienced number one, who should be a lieutenant commander or commander, not a mere ensign. So, yeah. Also, Tilly lacks the temperament. Burnham, Troy, Crusher, Shelby, Kira, Dax, B'Elanna, Seven are all characters with a more take charge attitude under pressure. I agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think I think it was definitely hashtag melodrama. And also I would say hashtag feels.
Yeah.
But like, just because it's a feel good thing doesn't mean it's the right move to make. I don't know. Anyway.
All right. And we did get a message from someone we haven't heard from in several weeks, from James, the augmented sailor. He says, "Hey guys, just wanted to let you know I'm still alive. I've been watching the show, but I'm behind. Haven't even watched this week's episode yet. I've been dealing with some personal stuff that has taken a lot of my time. Unfortunately, I miss you guys. Still loving this season, even though Tilly being made XO is the most asinine thing I've ever seen and takes away all Saru's credibility as captain. The only reason I see that happening is purely to have a confidant at his right hand and not for what an XO's duty entails." Big time no, writers.
Agreed, James. And it's good to hear from you. I feel like we're two ships passing in the night.
Yes. Hopefully you will get things straightened out. And believe me, I can sympathize with your personal stuff that's taking a lot of your time. All right. So this episode, season 3, episode 8, titled The Sanctuary, is written by co-executive producer Kenneth Lynn and one of the staff writers, I believe, Brandon Schultz. Directed by number one himself, Jonathan Frakes. And of course, now captain of the Titan. The description from CBS.com, well, I guess he's also the captain of whatever that ship was on Picard. I can't remember the name of it.
Well, and that was definitely in the past now. So he's not captain of anything now. He did.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's an historic figure now. The description from CBS.com is as follows. Burnham and the USS Discovery crew travel to Book's home planet to help rescue it from Osira, the formidable leader of the Emerald Chain. Meanwhile, Stamets and Adira continue their search for valuable information on the origin of the burn. We didn't get a star date. Its air date was in Pacific time, December 2nd at 11:07 p.m. At least that's when I found it. My phone was spinning, so I didn't get to check it at its usual 11:06. On Eastern time, it was December 3rd at 2:07 a.m. is when I first got access to it, with a runtime of 47 minutes and 45 seconds. So, Ruthie, what did you give The Sanctuary?
Well, lest we get any more negative reviews on Apple Podcasts because we don't like something, I will state at the outset, I didn't care for this episode as much. So I'm going to give it a random 8.9. And I'm sorry if you don't like our rating system person who gave us a bad review. And that's all I'm going to say on that matter.
I also didn't like this one as much. And I think the source of it goes right down to the planet. So that's where I had the issues. So I'm going to give this one an 8, actually. Quippy insults and withering glances. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love her so much.
Yeah.
I think they're definitely not spending time on the things I want them to spend time on, honestly. And I think that was probably the source of my ennui, I suppose you could say, with this episode. I wanted more of the things I wanted to see and less of what I didn't.
That's pretty much how I was with this episode as well.
I wanted more about the burn. I wanted more about Giorgio. I wanted more about... I even liked the Adira Stamets stuff happening. I couldn't have cared any less about Osira and the Emerald Chain. I really couldn't have cared very much less about the stuff going on with Book's planet. I like Book. I like Book and Michael, but I didn't really care what was happening down there, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. They just didn't do a very good job of engaging me. So,
yeah, I can say pretty much exactly the same thing. So my rating's lower, but the things that I had issue with are pretty much the same. The thing that I really liked was the Detmer and the fighting, you know, with Rin and, you know, on Book Ship.
Yeah, I've got that too. I really like the Detmer Rin grudge show.
And a specific thing that I'm going to mention on that, which is in my my yeses, that made it feel right at home for me. But we'll get to that. But yeah, so I love that. And so I loved everything, but I didn't really care for Osira, and I didn't really care for the stuff on the planet. So that's where I'm at. That's why it's an 8. All right, so let's go through listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start?
All right, Edwin from Arizona says 9.5, carry on.
Aaron from Akron says, I'd give it 7 out of 10, space shaman communing with animals.
Jeff X-Force 11 says 8.5, Detmer's got her groove back.
John from NC says 8 First Officer Tillys, try again. Fantastic.
Yep. Will from SoCal says, I rate this episode a 9 out of 10. Love it.
Wes from Minnesota says, the Sanctuary went down a little bit off that roller coaster. Still hit high marks. I give it 9.5 Saru cringeworthy phrases out of 10. I agree with that. Not bad for an episode that airs the day right before my birthday. Oh, happy birthday, Wes.
Happy birthday, Wes. You'll have to tell us how old you are if you want. Just kidding. But no, really. Yeah, I agree. I feel like I'm on a roller coaster too with this show right now. And this one was a bit of a downer for me. Trey from Pittsburgh, who we just heard from earlier, says 9.4 warm and fuzzy feelings with very cold hands out of 10.
LT from NC says, he says 7.9 out of 10. It's a cat.
Oh, man. And finally, Mike from Arizona says, the Sanctuary is just what the doctor ordered. I give this episode 9, where did I bury that last body, plus 0.5 advancement is good, for a total of 9.5.
That's good. Both Culber quotes.
Yep. What was I just doing? Where did I bury that last body? That was definitely my favorite.
All right. So now it is time for our yeses.
Yes!
Edwin from Arizona says yes to Detmer's flying.
Aaron from Akron says yes to finding the burn source.
Will from SoCal says the Discovery crew reminded other species how the Federation gets down and cares. They did it without firing a single shot and saving Book's planet. That point probably needs more discussion, because there was a lot of, like, I don't know, propaganda speak that we hear about the Federation later. We'll all talk about it. So,
alrighty. Wes from Minnesota says, Osira, she may not be a great villain yet, but her introduction was done well. I suspect she will be menacing as the season nears its conclusion. I suspect a war will happen between the Federation and the Emerald Chain. Detmer actually gets to do things. She was actually a badass.
LT from NC says, Lieutenant Detmer's wild ride. I enjoyed that they are still giving her some screen time and character development without her having an untimely demise. Yes, thank goodness for that. In fact, I think she made a great recovery this week. I like the way they used Rin as both a character and an expositionist. For just an extra character, it was good to see them deliver a little extra development. I like seeing Osira as both the new face of the Emerald Chain and furthering the notion that the Orion women are the brains of the syndicates, much like we saw in Enterprise. And it's always good to get more JoJo in depth rather than just the action backup and deliverer of snarky quips. Yeah, I would agree with that, although I still love the snarky quips.
Yeah. Mike from Arizona says, Philippa is back and in her snarkiest form yet. finally some action. And now we know that what they, Adira, want to be referred to as. Culber is back and seemingly acting in the chief medical officer role. Detmer finally experiencing traumatic growth. Go Tilly with her think outside the box, but not so original idea. Yeah, I didn't really understand why they thought that that would really work.
Yeah, seemed a little naive. All right, Ruthie, what do you have for your yeses?
I it was kind of corny, but I enjoyed Saru trying out his different catchphrases.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. I wonder what he will eventually land on, honestly.
Hopefully none of the ones that he's tried.
I know. Manifest is definitely a no. Oh, man. I also really enjoyed the Detmer Rinn grudge show.
Yes.
And, of course, I should say, as usual, I really enjoyed the Georgiou stuff. I mean, it's Michelle Yeoh, and she's great. So, she just, I don't know.
Is that it?
She has a, I don't know. I like her snark. I don't get tired of it.
Yeah. So the way she delivers it.
Yeah. I like when she's trying to, or when they're trying to, they give her the anesthesia, countdown from 10, and she
yeah. doesn't
even finish her sentence.
Yeah.
That was not just great with the snark, but the physicality of it, you know, it was perfect in its, just how it was delivered and the way that she.
Yep. I agree.
Acting, directing, combination. It was great. I liked it.
Do you have anything else?
I don't think so. My notes are scant. Okay. So.
Right. Well, you did mention the Detmer Rinn grudge thing on Bookship. Well, I'm going to say there was something specific that I got a kick out of on that, and that is that cats don't like space battles as much as they don't like riding in cars.
Yeah, no kidding. I heard
Grudge make a lot of the same noises my cats have made over the years when in the car, whether we're moving and we're driving them in the car and they're like going crazy, which I've had a couple of pretty bad experiences with. Or just taking them to the vet, you know, it's
I actually traveled across, not across the whole country, but from New Mexico to Oklahoma with my cat. And it wasn't so bad once we were just driving on the freeway. I think the back and forth motion of the starting and stopping a lot was what she didn't like at all. But after we calmed down and she just sat on my lap practically the whole time we were on the freeway and it was great.
But yeah, I think
before that,
the worst moves I had, like we didn't do it cross country, but because when we moved down to Florida, Julie like took the plane down here and Loverboy, our cat at the time, flew with her. And he was just kind of scared, but when we made moves from Cleveland to the suburbs of Cleveland, which was, you know, like 35, 40 miles out, those moves where we had like five or six cats, it was like a cacophony of those. Yeah,
I bet that wasn't fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So anyway, that made me, I was just laughing my ass off during that whole battle. Every time I heard Grudge make that noise.
I know.
Yeah.
And again, another actor who's clearly held a cat before.
But I love his reaction though. You know, what is this?
What is it? I know. Is it a pet? Yeah. She's like, it's a cat.
Yeah.
It's funny.
But Specifically, though, I loved Detmer getting her groove back and just kicking ass on that in that scene. So
yep, going full manual.
Yeah, to me that was great. Couple things I noticed with Adira and Stamets. Adira's they or them. I thought that was well acted by Blue Delberio and Anthony Rapp. Now, I think this is one of those examples where it's kind of played a certain way because you're acting this in the 21st century, where this is still a thing that people are learning about. It's not necessarily mainstream, you know, like a lot of people are, you know, referring to themselves as they or them. It's not like an uncommon thing, but it's still not, I would say, common. And I even mentioned earlier in the season that this was something I wasn't terribly used to yet. I'm becoming more used to as I learn. But anyway, it's one of those things that I would think in the 23rd century, or the especially in the 32nd century, this wouldn't really be a thing. So it's played a certain way because it's in 2020. But anyway, I thought that the way it was acted, the way it was written, all of that seemed very good to me, and it felt very personal to me. I know that Blue has been going through this this decision to, you know, take they and them as how they define themselves. So, you know, I know that was a personal thing to them. So, you know, I thought it was really shown from the acting. So I really enjoyed that. The other thing I noticed I didn't expect, Stamets more than once in the episode was making head tilts, much like Data and Soji. And I picked up on it, like he like made that like that Data would make, or we saw Soji make a couple of times in Picard. So it made me think, is he an android? Well, of course he's not an android, but he does have the head tilt. So probably nobody else noticed that, but I did. So other than that, I thought that pretty much the stuff with Giorgio, I loved all that. I love that effect with her face. That was fantastic. And just all the things that she's going through, I find that really interesting. I found how Saru was captaining was interesting. I can see some of the comments about Tilly and how she is acting. Like I kind of said last week, it's almost like she's like the assistant to the captain more than a first officer. But at this point, it seems appropriate. So anyway, I just want to see who ends up first officer at the end of this. I think it's probably going to be Burnham. She'll switch back, but we'll see. Who knows? All right. So I think that's it for our yeses. So let's move on to our noes.
No!
Edwin from Arizona says no to the Orion villain. She wasn't as menacing as I hoped. And that's a funny thing. I thought that she was menacing, but at the same time, she wasn't, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. I thought she wasn't really that intimidating.
Yeah. Like some of the things that she did, like especially what she did to her nephew, I thought that was pretty brutal and pretty ruthless. But at the same time, she didn't have like a very intimidating effect on her. Her persona wasn't very intimidating to me.
Yeah, with her ridiculously long fingernails, I was like, sorry, I just don't find that scary.
And she had this, I was trying to look up, you know, who she was, and I have some information on that for later. But she had this like accent that was kind of like
weird.
Yeah, it was like phasing in and out of like English and, you know, or North American.
I might be British, but probably not.
Right.
But I could be.
Right.
But probably not.
Right. And she isn't, like, by the way.
It sounded like a bad fake accent, honestly. I was like, maybe that was part of why I was like, eh. It's like, I mean, if you're going to be menacing and evil, then do a proper British accent, because we all know that all the Brits are evil.
Yeah. I guess
all the good bad guys, anyway.
I guess I'll mention it here since we're talking about her. She's played by Janet Kidder, and she's been in a heck of a lot of TV, especially, TV that shoots in Canada, of course. She is Canadian, and you may know that last name. She is the niece of Margot Kidder, who, of course, was known as Lois Lane in the first four Superman movies. So that's where what her pedigree is.
But I could see the family resemblance.
Yeah, there is. And I think, like, one of the things she's known for, she was in Arrow, and she's got a pretty long list of credits. Not much that I've ever seen her in, but she does have a pretty long list of credits. So
she must have been in Arrow after I quit watching.
Maybe. But yeah, her...
Or I just don't remember her. I don't know.
Like, I mean, her TV credits go way back to 97. And she's even been in, like, X-Files, like the recent X-Files.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well...
But it's mostly, like, bits and pieces, TV films, a few recurring roles. I don't see anything where she was, like, a full-time role, but she's been in a lot of stuff.
Well,
so
what can I say?
Yeah.
I think maybe she was kind of forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either that or she's a super great chameleon, and that's why I don't remember her from anything.
Probably. Mm. Yeah, she was in Arrow playing Ruvae Adams in season 4. That's where she's... And she was in Continuum as well. Anne Sadler? Is that the...
Oh my gosh, that's his mom.
Yeah, mom, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't remember her from either thing. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, so anyway, moving
maybe
on.
Maybe she'll grow into her villainhood. Who knows?
Maybe.
All right. Aaron from Akron says, no to charged harpoons. Crossbows, what's the point of using a projectile?
Yeah, I noticed that too. And supposedly, Cree-Gen was supposed to be a pre-warp civilization before...
Cree-Gen.
Before Osira and the Emerald Chain got to them, I guess. So I guess that's why, but... I mean, book
that way.
Well, that's what they made it sound like, but at the same time, that's
what they implied.
Yeah, but like book, he seems to know his way around a starship. So,
well, that was 100 years ago as well. So,
well, that's true. Will from SoCal says no to Osiris' ship. What happened to all that firepower? The big bad ship was taken out by the little ship flown by Detmer. And all I could think of with that was like the first Star Wars movie.
Well, yeah, my response to that is they also had someone telling them exactly where to hit. Makes a difference.
Yeah, true.
All right. Wes from Minnesota says, Giorgio, it felt like this was tacked on. It was interesting that she is suffering from something. I can see how it seems tacked on because I really thought that they were going to do more with it this time around, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't think it felt tacked on. Okay. I see what he means. Tacked on as far as tacked on to this story, but it could have been part of another story. And it seems like, according to the previews, that it's probably going to be in... quite a bit in the next story, but yeah
that's what I guess. Maybe he meant it felt like an afterthought or something. I don't know.
It's like something that I was going to bring up as far as the Osiris stuff. So I'll mention one of my no's here because it's related, I guess. The stuff about Osiris on the, is it Hot How? Is that what it's called? Hun How. With the nephew. That could have just as easily been shown at the end of episode 6 as it was this episode. That, to me, felt tacked on. So, Giorgio stuff similarly could have been tacked on. It was almost like they switched up the Giorgio stuff with the, I guess I didn't switch it exactly, but maybe they had the stuff for Giorgio. It could have been in a different episode, could have been in episode 7, and instead it was in episode 8. I don't know, but it did feel like that stuff could have been in other episodes. So I see what you're saying. But I felt the same kind of thing with Osiris and the nephew, can't remember his name, on Hun Hao.
Toral,
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like she would have been more intimidating / menacing if they had put that in a previous episode and that was all we got.
Yeah.
Then it would have been like, ooh.
Yeah.
But instead it was like, oh, she's, you know, a mean person who just killed her nephew. And then all we got from her was bluster.
Right.
And threats. And shaking fingers. You better not, blah, blah, blah. You're going to regret so-and-so. Or whatever. I was like, yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Well, she did strafe the planet.
Yeah, she did, but she still didn't get anything from it.
Right.
From her efforts.
Exactly.
It's kind of like, you just got your butt handed to you by a little mini ship, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems like someone else should have gotten their butt handed to them if this person is such a huge villain. But hey, what do I know about villains?
What do you know?
I know I don't usually like them. Oh, man. Except for Giorgio. She's kind of a villain, but I kind of like her. She's kind of like, she's like your friendly neighborhood villain. Anyway.
She's the villain fighting for you.
Yeah, she's the villain you want on your side. Oh, my goodness. All right. LT from NC says, so what were the locusts eating? The planet looked awfully green and leafy to have been plagued by hungry insects, unless the biscuit trees were not on screen.
That is the one of my no's as well. This whole thing about a famine was talked a lot about, and yet we see a lot of people that look very well fed. We see a lot of vegetation, and we see no crops. We like the crops are not even shown to us. So, like, that's the biggest problem that I had with this. Like, the whole stuff on the planet was, to me, very weak. And they didn't do a good job of really explaining that there was this terrible famine. And, you know, we don't hear about, like, the sun until they're up on the, you know, at the last minute. Oh, you have a sun? You know?
Yeah.
Just, like, that part of it was pretty weak to me. Just in overall, it wasn't well done.
I have to agree. I didn't really like very much of the stuff that happened on the planet, to be quite honest. I mean, you've just killed us all. Really? Because, I don't know. I thought the whole pesticide thing to remove the sea locusts to a different location, I thought that was very weak. You know, the whole, all we can do is ask them to move. I'm like, well, why don't you then? Why would you not try that?
Yeah. Well, that's another point that I've got in my nose here. I said, their scientists have been working for decades to try to solve this problem. And Burnham just says, hey, you two empaths, why don't you just put your heads together and just ask them to leave? And then it's like, well, there's too many. Oh, we'll just beam down a beam from Discovery and we'll amplify your signal and that'll fix the problem. So that, you know, they fix it in an hour. You know, so Discovery's able to fix it in an hour what their scientists have been working on for decades.
decades.
That's just beyond stupid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand why. I mean, I guess this works for her, but this is another thing I don't really like about the Emerald Chain is that, and honestly, okay, so true confession time. I've been watching The Walking Dead again. Okay, don't get too excited. It doesn't mean anything. My stepmom really wanted to watch the show, and so I told her I would watch it with her. So we've been watching, and we've had to pause our watch in the middle of season 5. Well, the first third. Anyway, season 10, sorry, in the middle of season 10 because my sister got the coronavirus.
Damn coronavirus.
And she was tested positive. I know, damn it, COVID-19. She tested positive, and so we're all in quarantine. We're in our separate corners quarantining. So I'm in quarantine right now. I have 1 week left to go. Anyway, a little less than 1 week. Anyhow, something that I don't like, I didn't like in that show when it happened. It made me quit watching. I don't like in this show. Some bully shows up and says, "Give me all your stuff." And they just go, "Okay." And do it. And I'm like, some bully just shows up out of nowhere and says, I'm threatening and intimidating you and you better listen to me. And so, I mean, I guess they were pre-warp or whatever, but still, it just seems like at what point in time do you not, I don't know. I guess to me, I'm like, that went on way too long because I would have stood up to the bully a long time ago if it were me, I suppose. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I've never really been in that situation myself. But there's only so long that a person or people can be downtrodden and subjugated before they'll fight back. And I mean, maybe, I guess, I don't know, but I sort of feel like as Americans, we have a certain view about that kind of stuff because we threw off the boot of oppressors before. So we're like, ha ha, never again. And I don't know, it just happens way too much in the stories I'm watching recently. I'm like, why do people just let this Emerald Chain bully them around? I'm like, just stand up to them, throw off the chains of the oppressors. Anyway, I thought this was a completely weak aspect of the show, of any storyline, honestly. I'm like, why do people still put up with bullies, I guess? That's what I really want to know. So anyway, but yeah, I agree, LT. You're right. What were the locusts eating? I think the biscuit trees were off screen.
Well, they definitely were, you know, and a bit, but all they did was, you know, take what looked like maple trees in the Toronto area and just, you know, change the tint a little bit, much like they did in season 1, episode 8. You know, where they ramped up the blue. This time they ramped up the brown.
Yeah, but they didn't do a very good job of showing. I mean, the best thing you can do in TV is show, not tell. They did a terrible job of showing drought and famine.
Yeah.
Just terrible. All right. So his final no from the final no from LT. From NC, also known as LC. So So is the Emerald Chain so short of lackeys that the boss didn't bring any backup? That's a good point. I mean, she wasn't expecting the Federation ship to be there, but I don't know. I guess I just don't understand anything about this new timeline, honestly. None of it makes sense to me. I don't understand why all the people who left the Federation left the Federation. I don't understand why they would leave the Federation. I don't understand why they would be so devoid of power that they wouldn't have any... I don't know. I don't know why the Admiral agreed to send them in the first place, honestly. It should have been another rogue mission or a you're going without us mission or a we'll drop you off and then bounce mission. Because, I mean, come on. You had to know there would be a conflict when you sent them.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that too. Like, if anything, just like a drop off and you know, like just be a shuttle.
Yeah, like we can get you there quickly, but we're out of here after that kind of thing. Like all we can do is provide transport, which would literally have taken them like, what, 10 minutes round trip?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was disappointed in that.
Last is Mike from Arizona. He's got a few here. He says, still no jet. Well, thanks for holding up the James the Augmented Sailor quip about still no jet. Hopefully she'll be back next week. And still no display of Discovery's weapons and shield upgrades. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking the same thing, that we didn't get to see how Discovery's weapons and shield upgrades are, because I wanted to see that. That would be good to see. Admiral Vrance's rationale for trusting Discovery to go on a mission where they are likely to encounter combat due to an Osira that isn't open to diplomacy seemed weak to me.
Agreed, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And lastly, so Burnham and Discovery figured out all they needed to do was amplify the frequency and the Quajan. I know I said it wrong again. Couldn't figure this out on their own. I'm acknowledging that book never said Quajan don't have ships, just not warships of Osiris type. Like I could have Googled it and gotten the same answer. I need them to bring something else, like Ruthia stated, such as a different perspective that was maybe lost in the past 900 years, because they should not be able to match technological thinking and advancements so easily. Yes, yes, and
no, they
yes.
should not.
You know, I was thinking this, and this is kind of my negative as far as the stuff that's going on with Georgiou. You got Dr. Culber and Dr. Pollard working on her. And yes, they've got access to technology that's 900 years in the future, but think about that. What were doctors from 930 years ago doing? Well, first of all, they probably weren't called doctors. They were called medicine men or healer or alchemists or you know,
yeah.
Whatever. They didn't really have shaman. A thing called doctors. And, you know, as we were talking about in a previous episode, doctors for, you know, long time didn't even like wash their hands when they perform surgery. And they certainly didn't like sterilize the instruments, you know? So what advancements would occur? It's kind of like they treat it like there's like a technological cliff that happens. And then once you're at the cliff, it's like a flat earth kind of thing. So once you're at the end, there's not enough, you know, like all the advancements slow down. And someone who's 930 years in the future, oh, they only know a few extra things, or they've got better instruments or something. I mean, take a doctor from like 1920, and he's not going to know what the hell to do in 2020.
He's not going to be able to perform endoscopic surgery.
Right.
Without some serious training. They're kind of acting like, oh yeah, I read up on all the technological advancements in a day. I'm good.
The only way it would be plausible to me is if in the 32nd century, they had the technology like they did in the Matrix.
Yes. Download knowledge directly to your brain. Yeah.
Yeah. So like cool. Trinity could learn to fly a helicopter in seconds.
Yeah.
That's what I could see working here. But other than that, if they can't do that, then I think that them trying to, you know, make everything just, you know, miraculously be, you know, like, okay, a starship is a starship. I get that. And there are certain, you know, a computer from 20 years ago isn't that different from a computer from now, except the software is completely different.
System.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of it. Every time they come out with a new operating system, there are changes and different things that you have to adjust to. And unless you're reading that owner's manual very closely, you might not get everything. I mean, I remember when I don't have a PC at home. I have a Mac. So the only PC usage I get is at work. And when I switched from whatever I had before to Windows 10, I was like, what the heck? So, I mean, there was definitely a learning curve. Now, imagine that times 20 or whatever. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's like they all got up to speed in a day or two. I'm like, man.
Yeah, I can imagine like going from like Windows 3.1 to Windows 10. It would be quite, or for that matter, going from DOS to Windows 10. That would
exactly.
That would be even more shocking.
Yeah. I agree. I think they're assuming too much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. So that is it for our listeners. What do you have for no's?
I think I've kind of pretty much
said your piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to belabor the point too much. I guess just that whole, like, I don't know why they thought, I will reiterate, I don't know why they thought sending out Detmer in Book's ship would absolve the Federation from having any part of this.
Yeah.
Why are they surprised that she would take out her, or why are they surprised that she would retaliate against the Federation when clearly it was a Federation action? Just because it was a non-Federation ship, I just thought that was so flimsy. That's about all I got.
What I was going to say is, and this, I kind of weaken this no after watching it another two times. I've seen this four times in total, and I wrote this down after the second watch, and after the third watch, I kind of lessened it a little bit, but I still have it down as a no. The scene near the end with Tilly and Rin seemed a little odd to me, since I thought at first that their only interaction before had been when Rin disrespectfully came into Saru's ready room. That's not actually true. They had a couple of interactions like on the bridge after that. So that's why I kind of have to say, no, that's not exactly true. But so part of it didn't feel exactly earned to me that they would have that conversation, like why he would have it with Tilly. But I did see on a couple more watches that Tilly had challenged him several times in the episode, like at least three times. So I guess based on that, I buy it a little more, but still it did seem a little weak. But then I remembered that Rin is played by Noah Averbach Katz, who's Mary Wiseman's husband. So I thought, oh, that's why they did that. So, you know, I think they could have had a little more there before they had that scene, and I would have bought a little more. Maybe there was a scene there that they cut out. Or shortened, that would have bought a little more, but there was enough there. So this is a small end no versus a large end no when I first wrote it down, but still a no. Okay, so
all right, then.
That's it for our no's. So now, speaking of Tilly.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
Edwin from Arizona says, why didn't Book's brother tell them he had a son in the first place? Yes, I agree.
Good question. I don't know.
It just seems so strange to bring it up right at that point.
Like, I guess they were estranged, so why would he? But I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Aaron from Akron says, not good enough to the Federation having a pretty imperialistic / malevolent reputation to all of the species that Discovery has encountered. What happened?
And I had a take on this. I thought, if anything, I'd say it's a combination of being stretched too thin. The idea that we kind of saw from Picard, that the outer reaches aren't represented as well as the founding or earlier worlds. Like we see the world where the Kuat Malat are and the Romulans are, it seemed like they had basically been forgotten by the Federation. We definitely see that mentioned in the show. And if you read, I know it's not, you know, alpha canon, but if you read the Picard book, The Last Best Hope, that's pushed even more forward in that. But again, that's not alpha canon. So, but it is definitely pushed in, you know, the world that Elnor was on and all that. And of course the, Fenris Rangers, stuff that Seven is dealing with. It definitely seems that the Federation's kind of pushed too thin. So I think it might be that. And then, you know, like projected a few more hundred years after that, maybe they recovered from that, but then they got stretched thin again, especially after the dilithium stuff happened. Or it's just an example of the enemy throwing out propaganda. And that's probably my most likely scenario here, is that it's just, you know, the bad guys, you know, telling the bad stories about the bad people that are their enemies, you know, so that other people don't try to turn, you know. So that's what I'm thinking it is. It's propaganda.
Yeah, makes sense.
Will from SoCal. He says, please hold my horses. Saru goes rogue and sends an unauthorized Starfleet ship to engage Osiris' superior ship, and it wins. The Admiral says, don't engage. Now it looks like Saru just started a war with the Chain Gang. We criticize Michael for making these same questionable decisions.
True dat, yo.
I cannot disagree.
Nope. That was exactly my point with the whole, why do they think this flimsy reasoning would hold up? Honestly.
Yeah.
All right. Wes from Minnesota says, if I had an opportunity to say it, Saru, work on your catchphrase.
LT from NC. He has a couple here. He says, maybe Saru needs to look up Captain Freeman's book about finding your trademark word. That's, of course, from Lower Decks, if you don't recognize that, listeners. If you haven't seen Lower Decks, because I know, unfortunately, Lower Decks is still not available in international markets yet. I hope that gets addressed soon. But right now, it's still only legally available in U.S. and Canada.
Or even if you have watched Lower Decks, you might not have gotten that reference. So right. Thanks.
True. Plus, if that is your word, you have to deliver it with some conviction. Yes. Execute. So hopefully that doesn't mean electric chair or something. Lethal injection. Anyway, we need some flashback time on why all of a sudden the Federation is the boogeyman to so many cultures. It is way too much of an offset from what we know to think they are suddenly the same as old school Klingons. And
yeah,
I think maybe there needs to be some explanation as to what's going on there. Like I said, maybe it's propaganda, but maybe there's something else going on, but it's worth some investigation.
I also would like to know why so many member worlds, founding member worlds, no less,
left. Down. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. All righty. Mike from Arizona says, how did Tilly know what a Starfleet distress signal sounds like from a 900-year advanced starship? Why couldn't their computer determine which ship it was coming from? Because reasons.
Yes, reasons.
We had to draw it out so that Adira could write an algorithm.
Exactly.
That's why. I don't know.
Well, yes. Yes.
I don't know. As far as why Tilly recognized it, maybe it just hasn't changed.
That's possible.
I mean, SOS hasn't changed. It's still the same in Morse code. And that I can't imagine that would ever change. So probably it's one of those things that you just don't update just in case. You never know.
Yeah.
All right. He says, what's up with the Jinsu dart guns? They look great, but I'm surprised by the projectile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Finally, Mike from Arizona says, I'm on the fence about the game controller type manual controls for Book's ship that Detmer chose. I guess at least it wasn't a joystick. Oh my gosh. Hey, that was my favorite Next Generation movie. So even with the joystick.
Yep. I get that one. All right. What do you have for Hold Your Horses?
I just have one. How exactly can Book tell that it's his ship from all the way down on the planet?
I was wondering that too, because I certainly couldn't see that from the naked eye.
Me neither. I was like, seriously? I mean, we can see the moon from our planet just fine. But his ship is significantly smaller than the moon.
Yeah.
And not to mention, they could see the other starship, too. I'm like, yeah. How big are these things? And how close are they to the upper atmosphere, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, and it's funny how they could see her ship, but they couldn't see Discovery. And how come they could see his ship, and they could see her ship, but they couldn't see Discovery?
I don't know.
Because I don't know, maybe I need to take another look at that, but the only ship I saw was her ship. And I don't.
The only ship I saw. I saw like mini explosions around her ship, but I couldn't tell exactly where the explosions were coming from.
Right.
And they were still clearly in space. So it's not like they were in the upper atmosphere or whatever. They were in space. He shouldn't have been able to see that. Unless he has really, really good eyesight, just like Saru has really, really good hearing, apparently.
Yes, he does. Yeah, and what was the name of that? It was, I think it started with a V.
What?
That ship.
Whose ship?
The Viridian? The Viridian. That sounds like it's a planet in Generations. So I had a few things that we already talked about. So I'm going to struck those out. And I had one thing in my notes, but after me thinking about it, it's got to be in my Hold Your Horses. I'm going to lead with that. We see another example of the senior officers. You know, they got something they're doing. They got working on their little calculation, their algorithm. So instead of working on something else, no, they don't go work on something else. It's time to play classical music. How many times did we see this in Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and especially Next Gen? It was always like, oh, the calculation's going to run a couple of hours. Oh, let's go play violin, or let's go listen to jazz, or let's go to the holodeck, or let's play a game of poker.
Oh, man, you got to take time to relax.
I know, but, you know, that's the thing. And they mentioned this on Lower Decks, too. It's like the Lower Decks guys, they'd have to, do some other, like, awful thing, like, clean out the holodeck, which was really funny, by the way. I had to think about that. So I guess Book is not a human based on this. Like his real name is Terex, Is that it?
T-Rex.
T-Rex. And he's how do you say this?
Quasion.
Quasion. Okay. So he's not human. He's humanoid, I guess. And he's a Quasion. So why does he have the name of Cleveland Booker then? What's the deal?
I feel like that is coming.
Yeah.
He hinted at it was a long story, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
As long as it doesn't take another 15 years to tell or something.
Yes. So anyway, I think that because I don't know if he's just trying to pass as human amongst the, you know, couriers or whatever, but you know, whatever the story is, I want to know what's going on. But the other thing that I have to wonder is, okay, so most of you have seen the Short Treks at this point, at least I would think the first season Short Treks, and this is a first season Short Trek, Calypso. And Calypso has the Discovery. Now, this is not the 1031A, but the 1031 ordered to stay put in a nebula for supposedly 1,000 years. And it comes across a ship. I guess it's a distress an escape pod that this guy Kraft, who's definitely a human but isn't a part of the Federation. He mentions the Vedraish, which has been mentioned this season. And that's our first encounter with is it Zara? Is that her name?
Zara.
The intelligence that becomes the Discovery computer from the Sphere, we think now at this point. So what I'm wondering is it possible, since this Discovery is in a nebula, and we find out that the source of the signal that started, you know, the dilithium issue is in this nebula, is it possible that this is Discovery in this nebula? And then when you think, is it possible that maybe since you can't, how can this possibly be, since it's a 1031, is it possible that this, in coming through the wormhole, it splintered and it's through another time, maybe even the Kelvin timeline?
What?
Could this be a Kelvin disco?
I think it was a mistake.
It'll be retconned.
I think the show people made an error.
Well, that I can live with, but the question that I've got, you know, 1031 and 1031A aside, is it possible that this is somehow Discovery?
I don't know.
And then we also have to think about Giorgio and what's going on with her and possibly this kind of interdimensional issue with her, based on what we see with her, could she have, or has to do something? I don't know, but makes me wonder how much of this is related to her. So I went back last night after we didn't record. I went back and watched Calypso just to see if there was anything that I could, you know, glean on, I could get a clue on, and I didn't find anything. There didn't really seem to be any difference between the season one, season two Discovery and the Discovery that was in Calypso. Of course, you wouldn't expect to find anything other than Zora. That's her name, Zora. I think I said Zara or something, but Zora. So that's my take on it. So I just wonder if somehow it's Discovery, and if it's Discovery, I have no clue how to explain it at this point, but makes me wonder though. Okay, so that's it for our Hold Your Horses. So let's open Hailing Frequencies. Normally, the first one that we play is usually from Jeff X-Force 11, but Jeff X-Force 11 was not the first one to get his voicemail in this week. The first one to get his voicemail in was Fred. So we're going to give him honors. So here we go. And this is version two of his voicemail. Because we just, listeners, so, you know, we had to, had something come up last night. So we ended up recording on Saturday night versus Friday night. You're probably going to get this a little bit later this week, unfortunately, as a result. Although I'm going to probably do a rushed edited version. So this won't be quite as polished as some of the other episodes you'll hear. So if you notice that, sorry. But anyway, so here's Fred's version two of his voicemail, which is about a bit, minute longer than his first one.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie, and all listeners to Talk True Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 8. What did I like most about this episode? That was actually the interview in the ready room with Ian Alexander and Blue Del Barrio. This was not the best episode. Book's home planet with the fight with his brother, I didn't like that too much. I had a bit the impression of the last season of Killjoys, where the quality of the storytelling got less and less. And then that whole thing with that infestation on this planet by these beautiful floating plants or animals. And at the end, the two brothers were able to just convince them to go back to the sea just by their empathic powers. What the heck? And the Discovery had to boost that? Really? And are these two brothers the only two empaths on the planet? Couldn't they boost it with just more people? I found that all a little bit far-fetched. I also have some problems with Odessa. She is not really convincing. I mean, it's just in the acting or something like that. Doesn't really feel like a real threat. The whole thing about Georgiou is getting annoying. They can speed that up a little bit. But if we see the ready room and we also see scenes of next episode, we probably will get more insight into that next week. What I did like is the interaction between Tilly and the Andorian and the Andorian and Detmer. That was quite okay. Piloting Booker's ship and the way she did that and the success she had with it is probably very good for her self-esteem, something she probably really can use at the moment. And I'm actually extra disappointed because the director was Jonathan Frakes and he always delivers nice episodes. Although the visuals were quite nice, but the story just wasn't. And that's of course not due to the director, but to the writers. So possibly he made the best of it. Okay, I will stop my rant here and leave the positive feedback to others. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you, Fred from the Netherlands, for your voicemail. And thank you for getting it in so quickly and giving us a version two. So you didn't like it. You know, it's funny when I heard you say that, and this was in version one and version two, that the thing that you liked the most was the interview on the ready room. I thought of all the times I said something really positive doing the Walking Dead talk through where the thing that I loved so much was on Talking Dead or the thing that I hated the most was on Talking Dead.
I remember that.
Yes.
That wasn't in the show.
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't? No.
But that, I had to laugh because that was, Ruthie and I had that conversation many times before.
Yeah. And I think the reason why they didn't solve their problem before was because Handwave.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I don't mind them taking time with Georgiou. I think they have to build to it. And I think based on you know, not to spoil too much, but there is a really nice preview that's in the ready room about next episode. And it seems like we're going to get quite a bit of an advancement on Giorgio's condition next week. So,
yeah, I just wish we had that this week, honestly, because I was disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I thought they were going to really dig into that this week. So that was my disappointment about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it did seem like they stopped short a little bit. And, you know, maybe they could have done it all in episode 9. But, like, and I wonder if she's going to be gone after episode 9, you know? If,
yeah.
It's, you know, we don't know, but.
I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. But, yeah, I mean, I think largely I do agree with you. This wasn't their best episode. I might say it was my least favorite of the season. I think certainly in ratings it was. And as Ruthie had indicated, we did get an iTunes review. I think it was done a while ago. I think it got released maybe just this week because it was, you know, like those ratings get delayed a little bit around Thanksgiving time because of the holidays. So I only saw it this week. But anyway, yeah, and they didn't like our criticism of, I think it was episode 5. And, you know, yay, that happens. But we try to give honest reviews. And sometimes, you know, we might seem like we overcriticize, but we're trying to give a balanced review. And we love on the show when it's appropriate to love on it, but we also will pick it apart when it's time to pick it apart. So, and there were a lot of great things I thought about this episode. And if you need me to say it again, I thought that the space battle was incredible. I thought that was top notch all the way. Loved that. I thought the stuff with Giorgio, although they could have, you know, shown us more, I thought that was incredible. Like pretty much all the stuff that was on ship, I thought was great. It was the stuff on the planet that I didn't care for. And I thought I'm not sold on Osira either. Somewhat, like I thought she made a great entrance, but then the rest of it was kind of disappointing. And she doesn't, I agreed with Edwin, she doesn't seem that menacing to me. Like,
yeah.
Maybe she needed to be a little more, you know, pardon the pun, but a little more mustache twirling. I mean, she's not going to have a mustache, but you know what I mean? that might have made her a little more menacing. I don't know. But I think going in and out of that semi-British accent was a little distracting for me. So,
yeah, I was a little too, like, I was listening to her on the ready room and I was like, what is she? I can't tell what's going on. I don't know what that accent is, but I didn't hear it. Like it wasn't happening when she was talking on the ready room. So that to me made it sound like it was a fake British accent. If that's not what she, like, if that's really how she talks and I just didn't hear it in the ready room, apologies, but I don't know what else to say. It sounded, I mean, that could be just the way she talks. I don't know. But to me, it sounded like a fake British accent.
And yeah.
I was not impressed.
Yeah. And, you know, it's worth saying she's from Cranbrook, British Columbia. So that's where she was born. I don't know if that's where she spent most of her days, but, and her aunt was born in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, of all places. She passed away a couple years ago, actually. Margo Kidder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was...
Well, you would know more about how Canadians speak, what their accents are than I would.
Yeah, I mean, some Canadians have some, like, a little bit of a British accent or some kind of, like, British-y accent, but it's usually more of a Maritimes kind of thing, and it's usually not like a fancy British accent. It's more of like a you know, like a Cockney type thing, or like Newfoundland accent words, you know, it's like no tanks, bud, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not a fancy accent. It felt very...
It's not posh.
It's anything but posh. So it's not typically an accent that you would hear Canadians do. So I don't know. It felt... Now, mind you, if she spent a bunch of time in the UK, then I could see, you know, her having that a little bit. But, you know, I don't see anything from her resume that shows me that she's spent a bunch of time in the UK. So,
And eventually that goes away anyway.
Yeah.
One of my stepbrothers spent 2 years in and around London, Bath, that area. And he definitely picked up a bit of a British, you know, lilt, accent, whatever you want to call it. He definitely had it a little bit for a little while, but it's totally gone now.
Yeah. Yeah, it says she is the daughter of Annie Kidder, who was born in Montreal, and obviously her the sister of Margot Kidder. So, well, no, maybe not. maybe that's a mother or sister-in-law. Anyway, but. Getting back to this. That's about it I have for Fred. So thank you so much, Fred. And let's move on to our next voicemail. And of course, this is from Jeff, X-Force 11.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and Star Trek fans. This is Jeff, X-Force 11, leaving my feedback about Sanctuary. I enjoyed this episode. It was fun to kind of delve into Book's family, extended family, and get more insight on the Emerald Chain. It was cool to get more information about Georgiou and what's going on with her. But what I really enjoyed about this episode was how Detmer really is getting back to who she needs to be. And the interaction with the crew on Discovery, with Saru trying out catchphrases, and just the interaction between all of the people on the ship. I think this series is strong because of the cast, and Michael is obviously kind of the lead here, but is best when this show is about the entire crew. So I appreciated those aspects of this episode, and I am excited to see what comes next. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, X-Force 11, for your voicemail, and glad that you enjoyed the episode, and that's about all I can think about saying. I'm glad you enjoyed it, so.
Yeah, I have to reiterate again how much I really did enjoy the trying out the catchphrases, especially with the kind of the almost like crickets sound that you could hear in your head after he said that, like the silence and the looks and the everybody's kind of like in agreement, like, nope, that's not it. I enjoyed those little moments as well.
Maybe it would have been better with some of Saru's like cricket phrases that he, you know, that thing he does.
I don't know about that. But
yeah, I think he needs to keep looking because I don't think any of those, I guess Execute was the best one of the ones that he used, but even then, I think Execute has certain connotations that I don't think we need to get into here, but.
Yeah, well, honestly, I'm sure they've got one in their back pocket that's going to be good, and he's going to be able to say it with panache and his own flourish, I suppose, if you will. So
yeah,
they're just waiting to unveil. I thought it was hilarious though that he was the way he was going about trying to pick his phrase.
What I want to know
on the other matter.
yeah What I want to know is, how did Manifest make the short list?
Yeah, that's a good question. Oh, goodness.
You know, kind of like sounds very like
religious.
No, you see people use Manifest these days, you know, like, you know, manifest your future or whatever, but it's kind of like, that's just crazy, you know.
I don't know. It just reminded me of, I'm going to go manifest myself some.
Yeah. And I always think of Manifest Destiny. So
wine or something. I don't know.
The funny thing is the first version of my Star Trek script that I submitted was called Manifest Destiny. Mm. So little trivia point. Yes. That was the one that got rejected unread. Because it didn't follow the formats.
Oopsie.
Yeah. I did think of one other thing that I wanted to bring up with Fred's voicemail that I didn't mention. And that was he was disappointed about the fact that it was a Jonathan Frakes episode. And I wanted to mention, I don't think all of Jonathan Frakes' episodes are great. Like, I have seen some of the ones that he's directed in the past haven't been great. I can't think of specific examples on this show or on Picard. I know the ones that he did on Picard. I know he did Absolute Candor and Stardust City Rag. I thought those were both pretty good. And I saw actually parts of Stardust City Rag last night. My iPad just kept playing, and it woke up. When I woke up, it was playing Stardust City Rag twice. So overnight. So, but I have seen some episodes that he's done in the past that weren't great. And there are a couple actually that I can think of. I can't think of specific ones, but I can remember general ones from that show that we always like to bring up, Falling Skies. So he directed quite a few episodes of Falling Skies. And I hate to say, but there were some of those episodes that weren't great. And I want to say, if I go back and look at one of the episodes, maybe he did. No. Because he did. Didn't he do the one where Arium died? Wasn't that his? Or do you do the one after that?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Now I have to look.
Well, suffice it to say, what you're trying to get at is they're only as good as the scripts, right?
I'm saying that he's not an alchemist. Like, if the episode isn't great, it's not necessarily going to be great just because he directed it, you know? So he directed two of the really good ones last season. He directed New Eden and he directed Project Daedalus. So, you know, but he also did People of Earth this season, which I didn't think was fantastic. So, you know, it wasn't terrible, but I definitely didn't think it was as good as the first two. So anyway, so that's all I'll say about that. All right, we got one more voicemail, and it's the second voicemail from Trey from Pittsburgh. And I want to just mention before we play it, the quality on this one isn't the best. So I tried to clean it up some. I ran it through our little thing that we use as part of our like final processing, which is called Auphonic, which fixed it up some, but it's still not the best. Hopefully it'll clean it up even more when I run it through its final processes. But anyway, it doesn't sound that great. It gets better as it goes. But anyway, here it goes.
Hello, this is Trey from Pittsburgh calling about the Discovery podcast, the most recent episode. Again, I really enjoyed this episode as well. I would give it 9.4 warm and fuzzy humans with very cold hands out of 10. I wonder how come the transworm chewed Osiris' nephew and the body parts flew everywhere, whereas in the season premiere, Burnham was swallowed whole and upchucked afterwards. So that would be my hold my horses. Georgia, during that medical procedure, how she phased or morphed, the hollow, maybe she's a hollow program to think to me. I'm not sure. I thought it was a cool effect, and it definitely sparked my interest. And I also thought that it was cool that Adira was firm with how she identified and that she would prefer to be called, they or them. The only thing in this episode that bothered me was, she is tired, he is tired, and then they refer to Adira as they are tired. So I guess because she's a symbiote, it works, but with English, technically it should be they is tired. So that bothered me, but other than that, it was a great episode, and carry on.
Well, thank you so much, Trey, for your voicemail. Second one this week. And this week, or this time, you'll get a full one. I won't cut this one off all the way. Yes, I did notice the inconsistency of the trance worm.
Yeah.
And we kind of actually saw this in the first episode, too. It's like everyone else kind of got all, chewed up, whereas Burnham got kind of gummed.
Maybe that's because he was saying no.
Maybe, but it reminded me in thinking about it, there's a similar creature in Lower Decks that kind of suckles Boimler. Remind me of that. Maybe that's how Burnham got treated. But yeah, I would agree with that because she didn't get all her body parts all like.
Dismembered
like he did, because it was pretty violent.
I noticed that too. I was like, man, that's new.
Yeah, although maybe the difference is that she wasn't entranced with him, whereas because I don't think she got the eyes, whereas he did. Like the people on the rest of Heme, they had the they had that. So
I'm not sure why that would make a difference in how the trance worm eats you.
No, I don't know if it would either, but now the other thing, and I would like someone who knows better to back me up or discredit me for what I'm about to say. But, and of course we do have a person who is very knowledgeable in grammar, who is my co-host. So she will probably have something to say, but I believe it is supposed to be they are tired. I don't believe it is supposed to be they is tired, despite the fact that we're talking about a singular person.
That is correct.
Well, if that's the case, then I get a
gold star for you. I don't care if it's they is refers to, it's plural, yes. Proper English is they are, no matter what you're referring to. If you're referring to a singular object or multiple objects, they goes with are.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like Trey, we're all learning this together. So this is to me, and, I said what I said early this season, this is a new thing for me. So I'm learning, so I may make mistakes in talking about this stuff, but I was pretty sure that it was they are, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about a singular person or, a plural person or plural people.
I'm pretty sure the reason why is if you're uncertain of it is the, term for if you're uncertain of an item, object, person's gender, what have you. That's why it's used. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's it for our voicemails. And we've got a fairly long one from Mike from Arizona.
I'll do it.
I know. You said you do the long ones.
All right. Mike from Arizona says, this episode was much closer to traditional Star Trek, where we get to see other bridge officers grapple with an issue and come into their own while the main character is off on the main mission. Yeah, that's true. Overall, I thought this was a decent episode in which the ground and space action, Detmer's recovery arc, another piece to the dilithium destroying Melody puzzle, and Michael's renewed efforts to obey the chain of command were satisfying. I also thought that the conversation between Stamets and Adira about which pronoun to use was important. They are providing more depth to the Trill symbionts as opposed to the Jadzia Dax character, where they limited the relationship mostly to holding memories of past hosts. With Ezri, they tried to add more complexity due to her undergoing an emergency medical transplant, sound familiar, but again, they limited it to sorting out memories and feelings. I hope with Adira, they continue to explore the emotional tightrope act of balancing multiple emotions and identities, not fall into the same traps as the Daxes, and not bring about some form of seamless transition too soon. This season is developing some parallels with Andromeda. I don't see Book joining Starfleet, but I think he will assist on missions when they need a non-Federation intervention, similar to the role that Valentine and the Eureka Maru played. That's all for this week. Have a great week, guys, and thanks for the opportunity to share my feedback. You're welcome.
Now,
we're glad that you gave us feedback.
The question that I would have with what you said, Mike, and I think I have an answer to it, but I'll just pose the question, is did Adira have the they-them wish before? Before Adira joined with Tal, and Adira had that conversation with Gray as Gray was the current host, or did Adira have that conversation with Gray after Adira had been joined with Tal? So, like, that's what I don't know, but my suspicion, my impression is that Adira had those feelings before joining with Tal. Do you have any thoughts on that?
That was my impression as well. Whether or not that's accurate or if that's simply because of our knowledge of the actor, I don't know.
Yeah. And like I said before, I felt like it was well earned. It felt like Adira was speaking from the heart, and knowing that Blue Del Barrio has been going through the same changes themselves, you know, right around the time that Blue was cast in this role, I think makes it even that more prescient and leads to some reality, some more realism in the role, in the portrayal. So it feels earned. It feels good. I feel like I'm connecting to that as I'm watching it. So I think it especially for a performer who's, you know, as I mentioned on the Ready Room, this is Blue's like first really big role. Blue really hadn't had much of anything before Star Trek Discovery. So it's really impressive coming into this, doing such a good job acting here. So LT from NC is our final bit of feedback this week. And he says, they teased us with the distress signal being the basis of the music, and now I want to know more about what the deal is. Plus, I'd love a little more intel on the Emerald Chain. Yeah, I would too on the Emerald Chain. So far, the Emerald Chain is kind of portrayed as Osira is the Emerald Chain, and there has to be more than just Osira in the Emerald Chain, because if that's true, she's just like a bully, like a single bully. And yeah, we haven't seen much else of the Emerald Chain aside from Osira. And she's kind of just, you know, like when Vance mentions Emerald Chain, it's like, oh, Osira's been busy. You know, it's not like anyone else. So, you know, and now we know from Rin that the running out of dilithium, which means that they could not be a big threat too much longer. So, but anyway, anything you want to say about that?
I want to know more about the music. I don't really care about the Emerald Chain.
I agree with that as well. I want to know about the Emerald Chain, but I do want to know more about the music too. I want to know the source, the Federation distress signal. That's why I wonder if it's Discovery somehow, or is it like somehow, I don't know, something from the Kelvin timeline. I've heard people say that. I don't even want to go there, but there is something, just in the preview, I know that there's something mentioned in the preview that could be related to that. We'll see. All right. Well, anyway, it's time for other notes. So what do you have for other notes?
Maybe I should lower my rating from an 8.9. I just wasn't all that impressed with this episode. I didn't really take that many notes. I didn't really have that. I just don't really have that much to say. Pretty sure I've said it all. I wish they spent more time on the burn.
Yes, I agree.
I wish they had spent more time solving or trying to solve the issue with Giorgio, but I just kind of feel like they're pussyfooting around, I guess. I don't know. I think they are moving too slow. I think they're moving too slow about everything. They've got all these like side issues. Like up to this point, I feel like they should be drilling down on these things at this point in time, but they're trying to stretch it out to have enough material, I guess, for the rest of the season. But I am disappointed. I guess I would call this episode a filler episode.
Yeah.
And I sometimes like filler episodes, but this time I really did not. I didn't think it advanced the story at all. We spent all this time waiting for something to happen, and I don't know.
Filler is probably an accurate representation of this episode. I think that, unfortunately, you know, this show has its thing where, you know, Burnham is the lead character, so we have to give an A story to Burnham. But we want to advance, you know, a B story and a C story and maybe a D story. So we'll give them a little advancement here and there. But, you know, we have to send, you know, Burnham down to the planet, or we have to send her, you know, looking for the big, you know, big thing in this episode. But it seems like there's like either they insert her into the episode in kind of a strange way where she doesn't necessarily need to be, like maybe episode 5, or she's like, you know, in one like last week where, yeah, she was fitting to be there, but at the same time, I don't know. Actually, last episode was pretty good, so I'm not going to say too much about that, but it does feel like they're trying to push a little thing. Well, let's give Burnham an interesting thing to do that maybe is not related to the main story. And that's what this one felt like. So I think, I think I agree with you that, especially considering this episode was only, I think, 47 minutes, I want to say. Oh, we had a 47. Look at that. Yeah, 47 minutes and 45 seconds. So we got a 47 this week. Yay. That's pretty bad.
I'd like to point out that was completely accidental.
Yes. But anyway, the point being, and we got like a 7.4, that was me watching the first episode. It was a 7.4 serial number. anyway, point being, though, that I think that I agree with you guys saying that there could have been more advancement with Georgiou, could have been more advancement with the burn. I definitely agree those things. And hopefully we will get more advancement next episode. So, because if you remember last season, this was, you know, episode 9 was the episode with Arium, and we had a major advancement as far as the whole control thing. That's kind of where control really, the story shifted to control. So, you know, maybe this will like really shift things into the burn, and while at the same time maybe answer the whole questions about Georgiou as well. So the only thing in my notes that we haven't talked about was one question that I know has come up before, but I had to ask myself this, and it was just based on a couple little comments made. Are Owo and Detmer a couple? Because just the way that Owo was talking to Detmer after she got back from, you know, her mission aboard the, what is the name of his ship? Something like Iron Eagle or so. I know that's not right, but I seem to remember Eagle was in the name of it, but
I don't know.
Anyway.
But to answer your question, no, I don't think so.
I think they're just good friends. So.
Just good friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I think honestly, if they were, we would see more affection, more physical affection between them. I think that they would show that rather than...
They could be bunkmates. I mean, they could be like
I'm
Tilly.
Sure they
and,
are.
Yeah. They could be like Tilly and Burnham, you know, sharing a room. So
I believe that they are completely platonic relationship.
Yeah. I think if we think about them as like bunk mates, you know, I think that makes a lot more sense than them being a couple. Because I agree. I don't see any physical thing with them, but I see really good a really strong friendship there. Like you might see if, you know, you live with your best friend, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Well, anyway, that's it for me. So let's move on to our shipwide announcements. Well, first thing we usually always bring up is the ready room. And of course, it was mentioned by Fred. So we won't talk too much about it, but Will Wheaton had on there an extensive interview with Blue Del Barrio and Ian Alexander. In fact, that was pretty much the extent of the show. Normally they have like another segment or something where they'll, you know, talk about special effects or costumes or something, but they didn't have that this time. It was mostly just the interview.
They did at the beginning.
Oh, okay. What was covered in the beginning?
They just did what they normally do in the beginning. They talked about, remember the actress who plays Osira was there talking.
Oh, okay.
That's when I was listening to her not fake British accent.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes, they had that. But what I was thinking of, usually they have the, they'll have like a segment after the interview before they have the sneak peek. They'll have like a little thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Because I think the interview went longer maybe than they initially intended. I don't know.
Yeah.
But because they had their little quiz question, right. Whatever they call it, that came the commercial break. Well, it wasn't a commercial break for me. But anyway,
yeah.
You get the idea before the scene for next week. So,
yeah. On to news. And we want to, again, thank Wes Huntington for collecting these for us. A spinoff to the Deep Space Nine documentary, which is what's called What We Left Behind. I was going to mention, I've noticed it is now free on YouTube. So, which I paid for it on YouTube now. So, but it's, I don't know if that's true, if it's free worldwide, but at least in the US, it is available for free. So you don't need to pay for it. It's, you can watch the entire thing for free on YouTube. So. Anyway, A spinoff of it is coming per the producer, David Saponi. And he's also the producer of the Voyager documentary, and that is back in production, which it was on hiatus due to COVID-19 and could be ready in 2021. So hopefully, COVID notwithstanding, hopefully it will get made and get be done by next year. The Star Trek film that Noah Hawley was going to make, it appears that it was actually further along than we previously thought. He mentioned in an interview this past week that his film was actually almost in the pre-production stage before the new head of Paramount, Emma Watts, pulled the plug. So they basically wanted to, you know, revisit the direction. And I honestly, I think a lot of it has to do with the success of the Star Trek franchise on CBS All Access / eventually to be called soon Paramount Plus. I think a lot of it does have to do with that. So we don't know for sure, but it stands to reason that they might want to eventually make movies that are based on what the TV franchises are now. But who knows? I'm just speculating. I don't know. But them deciding to rethink it is not surprising, considering like the last movie didn't do so well. And this one supposedly had to do with a plague or something, a virus. Probably not the best thing to have right now.
Yeah, that might not play very well right now.
There is a new book. We've known that this was in the works for a while, but is now out, called Star Trek, The Artistry of Dan Curry. And if you don't know that name, Dan Curry was a visual effects artist and supervisor from the TNG era all the way to the end of Enterprise. So you have definitely seen his work. He is known for a lot of the look of what we see in all of the iterations of Star Trek, from TNG to Voyager to Deep Space Nine to Enterprise. The Klingons, especially the fighting of Klingons, the Bat'leth, that's Dan Curry. The look of the Bat'leth was Dan Curry. So that's him. And the Klingon calisthenics and all that stuff, that's Dan Curry, because he was also a martial artist. So he came up with all that.
Well, all right.
Creation Entertainment, who of course does the, has, you know, up until last year did STLV, was supposed to do STLV this year, but of course with COVID, it got canceled. And of course now it's doing that, I forget what they're calling it, the 55 year celebration or whatever. They are also doing some kind of sci-fi con event in three different places in 2021 with Star Trek alumni. And those cities are Vancouver, Edison, New Jersey, which I believe is close to New York. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I believe it is. And very interesting to me, Jacksonville, Florida.
Ooh.
Yes. And why is that interesting? Because A, I used to live in Jacksonville. B, that's not too far away. So it's about, I don't know, maybe 4 hours away. So that might be possible for me. Who knows? But I don't know. They don't really have any information as to who is going to be there. And when I checked it yesterday, strangely enough, the Edison, New Jersey and the Jacksonville, Florida cons were on the same weekend. So I don't know what to make of that. That's kind of weird. That could be a typo, though. And the last thing I want to mention, as far as news, is that Ketwalski, who you may know as he's a very good Star Trek YouTuber, who's not one of the negative Nancys. He does a lot of really good Star Trek content on his YouTube channel. He published this week a two-part interview with showrunner of Lower Decks, Mike McMahon. And I have watched this two-part interview. It's mostly, it's not visual. It's actually, it's on his YouTube channel, but it's basically like audio only. It's effectively a podcast. But it's a great interview. It's like, I believe if you take it together, it's over 2 hours. And it's a great interview. Like, he asks them all sorts of questions, and they're not softball questions. They're good questions. And he's great. He's fantastic answering. He takes the good ones and the bad ones, and he gives you really good answers. He even talks about the whole issue with the distribution in international markets and talks about that, the delays on that. Really worth listening to if you get a chance. And if you're a member of the Facebook group, there is a link to it there. So ratings for season 1, episode 9, Into the Forest I Go on CBS for Thursday night. It got a 0.2 in the 18 to 49 with 1.887 million viewers. That is similar in the demographic with 0.2 last week, but way up from 1.507 million, which of course last week was Thanksgiving. So in the Parrot Analytics, the last thing we'll bring up is that Discovery dropped a slot, but its numbers went up. So that's the weird thing again. It went from 6th to 7th, but its multiplier went from 36.0 last week, times the average demand of a show, to 36.8 times. But some additional shows that came up, like The Crown and Animaniacs, kind of vaulted up, you know, shot up. It was actually Animaniacs that was the one that knocked Discovery down a notch. So anyway, that's it for our news segment. So Ruthie, why don't you take over and tell people how to send in their theories and feedback.
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, or you can call 216-232-6146. You can also shoot us an email by typing in StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com. Or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. As far as we know, the deadline for Discovery Season 3, Episode 9 will be on our regular day and time, Friday, December 11th, 2020, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 0000 UTC.
Yeah, and as we always say, always best to check the Facebook group if you're a member, because we had to push back our recording this week a day because of stuff going on. And it is possible this will happen again next week. Just so you guys know, I got some stuff going on at home that is going to be taking potentially my time or not. I can't be more specific than that. So anyway, best place, check the Facebook group, and sometimes the deadline changes. So anyway, it'll never change forward. It'll always change backward. So to connect with us at Twitter, you can connect with us at Star Trek TTM, and of course at Instagram at Star Trek TTM. A great way you can support us is to share those posts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I actually got caught up on Twitter, didn't get caught up on Instagram, but hopefully maybe today I will get caught up on those. Share the posts that we do on Facebook and our Talk Through Media Facebook page, which is facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. Those can be shared. The ones that are in our Facebook group is a private group. So we always post to the Facebook page and then share them from the page to the group. So the ones that are on the page can be shared. So help us out by sharing them or share the Twitter's ones. So anyway, share. Tell people about the podcast and subscribe to us as well. You're going to see something new this week. I'll mention it. It's not even on the webpage yet, but I'll have it on before the end of the week. There is a new thing, little widget that I'm going to put on the post that is going to have on there where you can write a review. So it's going to have links to Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Podchaser. It's going to have it all in one spot. So that's going to be there for you to see. So I got that all ready to go. I just have to plug them into the websites, so in the various web pages, but that'll all be one place. You can find it there and help us out by giving us more reviews. So also, great way to support us is, of course, through Patreon. And we owe you guys to do another Patreon episode because of some things that I've got going on at home. I may have to delay this. I will know soon what's going on. And then once I do, then I can figure out when I can do a Patreon episode. But so if we don't do one this month, that'll be why. But hopefully, if we don't do one this month, we'll maybe do two in January or something. I don't know. But anyway, I can't explain it much more than that. Patreon supporters like Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechleitner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, Jeff Gentry, and Jeff Bayako. All of our new episodes are first posted to YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and smash that subscribe button and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. Those videos go out there first, like I said, before the podcast does. Everything that Talk Through Media does can be found on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which also contains Rebinge, Deep Space Nine, The Walking Dead Talk Through, and Let's Talk Through. The next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast, season 3, episode 9, is titled Terra Firma. Now, I've seen this being mentioned as Terra Firma 1, and I've seen it mentioned as Terra Firma. Do you remember what they said on the Ready Room? Did they say Terra Firma, or did they not say anything?
I don't recall.
Yeah. Anyway, I've seen Terra Firma 1. I've seen Terra Firma. We'll know soon enough. Anyway, we know this. It is a two-part episode. So episodes 9 and 10 are both called Terra Firma. Teleplay is by Alan McElroy. The story is by Bo Young Kim and Erica LaPolt and Alan McElroy.
Is it McElroy? I don't know.
It may be McElroy. It may be McElroy. I don't know. Anyway, it is directed by, we don't know, and we don't know a description. But we do know that we see David Cronenberg guy in a sneak peek scene talking about Giorgio's condition and how it has to do with both time and alternate universe. So that's what's causing her issue. So if you go through time, you're not affected. If you go through alternate universe, you're not affected. But if you go through both, you're affected. So apparently that's his explanation anyway. And we also see an image of a guy in a next gen uniform. So
an early next gen uniform, like
an early next gen uniform. Yes. Yes. With the little, like leotard, not leotard,
the onesie.
It's the onesie version. Yeah. No collar.
They were all mostly onesies.
Yes, they were.
Even when they I was watching something and they said when they refabbed some of the uniforms, the ones that have the zipper up the front, they added a collar to it. That's all they did.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that too. Well, anyway, so we should get more explanation on Giorgio next week. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.